You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on July 22, 1988.
I made a departure this weekend from my accustomed north-south migrations between Marcellus and Oswego, wandering 100 miles westward to the flat fields of the Ontario Lake Plain. These are familiar fields to me, for this is the countryside where I grew up and did my first birding and botanizing. My boyhood home, located on South Main Street in the village of Albion, was just 3 houses north of the Arnold Gregory Memorial Hospital. The house was a fine old structure, partly brick and partly frame, with plenty of large rooms, a comfortable place for a budding naturalist to fledge. Even though the house was in the center of a residential area, our property was farmland, and 5 minutes' walk would put me in the heart of the crop fields and orchards, a countryside which at 6 in the morning belonged to the bluebird, the kingbird, the cedar waxwing, and that glory of the Lake Plains farmland in those post-depression days, the ringneck pheasant. Another 10 minutes' walk brought me to Hart's Woods. There, the ghost of J. Stuart Flintham, a forester who had honed his natural history skills there 4 decades earlier, roamed the woods with me, enjoying the reveille call of the wood thrush and the veery. Flintham had left behind his account of those woods as they had been at the turn of the century. His was a graceful prose of real literary merit, which fortunately for me had found its way to our local library. Those woodland acres were invested with a certain mystique by the realization that after 4 decades, thrush and ovenbird and vireo were still nesting where they always had. Still, there were many differences, too. Flintham's era still bore a recollection of the great flights of the passenger pigeon. Every beech and maple, a foot or more in diameter, had likely borne the weight of the pigeons as they rested in passage, the ground underneath undoubtedly subjected to their vacuum cleaner feeding technique. My woods were different. Any recollection of pigeons were buried deep in the heartwood of the few patriarch trees which still remained from that era. The Hart's Woods of my youth was younger and perhaps more dynamic, a woodlot in transition. Few trees of more than 18 inches in diameter remain, because the small Orleans County woodlot of that era still made a significant contribution to the fence post and heating needs of the farmstead. This placed an understandable drain on the forest resource. The trees had not long gained their majority before they were cut for firewood or other needs. All of this actually had its influence on the total wildlife community. Young trees provide less hospitality to woodpeckers and nuthatches, more to redstarts, grosbeaks, wood thrush, and dove. Pheasants crowded into the grapevine-infested pole stand of aspen, hornbeam, and cherry on the western fringe to spend their winter nights. It was the best protected roost they could find. It is doubtful that Flintham's era saw much, if any, of that. Today, Hart's Woods has a new role, dictated by a new set of neighbors. Some 23 years ago, an elementary school replaced the orchard, pasture, and crop fields, which had been the woods' milieu before. The woods, with the assistance of my older brother Ed, became an outdoor laboratory, a nature center with trails and interpretive devices. Hopefully, it has worked its way into the curriculum of the school district. I've no way of knowing. Little evidence of that can be found in the woods. From the standpoint of the wild denizens of Hart's Woods, all of this change in the human activities and use is hardly germane. As long as the trees produce proper crotches for nesting, birds will continue to make a home there. Neither do people along the trails deter chickadee or blue jay. I can spot a number of trends that bother me today when I think over the history of the woods, but I have to confess that the problems I see are probably peripheral, if meaningful at all, to the furred and feathered creatures which have persisted throughout 3 centuries of change. The tourlé of the wood thrush and the lisp of the vireo will be heard in decades to come, as long as a proper respect for what is wild is retained here, and in their Central and South American wintering grounds. Still, people keep trying to improve on nature by manicuring here, planting there, attempting to forge a neat and orderly and secure environment out of what is by birthright disheveled, disorderly, and hazardous, according to most people's standards. As I sit here today, contemplating 80 years of known history in one small woods, I realize how unusual it is for it to have remained so stable. Both from the standpoint of natural and recorded history, it is a rarity. I hope that its future will be blessed in another 40 years by someone who really comprehends its past. Well, that's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.